Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Mark, you are very concerned. You're very concerned tonight about the status of Americans and their preparedness, or maybe people worldwide, and their preparedness for the recession, whatever recession might be coming. You believe that one is relatively imminent?
Well, I don't know if you can use the term recession because at this point...
That's what you used off the air.
Though. I did use it off the air because okay. I'm using it as a catch-all. And the reason is the recession's defined as, and I don't have it sitting here right in front of me, but basically two quarters of negative growth or something to that effect. Hmm. Well, do you write the numbers, Ian?
No.
I don't write the numbers. Nobody listening to me writes the numbers. The government writes the numbers. And the government does not benefit by a recession. At least, you know, a lot of people in the government don't, right? The government doesn't exist. There are different factions in there and that kind of thing. And hopefully the factions keep each other honest. But the government doesn't benefit if we're in what we call a recession.
Now, when you say the government doesn't benefit,
yep,
you mean because tax revenues would go down in theory because of recession?
No, they want the consumers consuming. They want everybody to...
Well, people are still going to consume.
They want them happy. Well, yeah, they're going to consume, but are they going to consume
as much? Are people happy now?
I don't know.
Okay. Odds are your standard of living or the your ability to make ends meet has been getting tighter over time, and that's because of what the government has been doing to the money supply and their various manipulations.
And, there's the statistics that say 40% of Americans can't put their hands on $400.
They don't have that much in savings is what you're saying.
Yeah. Right.
They might have a car sitting in the yard, but that's not $400.
60% of Americans can't put their hands on $1,000. Mm-hmm. One-third of baby boomers, 33%, can't put their hands on $1,000.
That's sad. If you're a baby boomer and you can't put your hands on $1,000, I mean, you've been around for what, 60 years, 70 years?
I'm 48, and I'm in the middle of Gen X. So right. I think the youngest baby boomer is probably got to
like
be 60.
Something. 60.
And, there's another staggering statistics I've got here. 38% of Americans say that their highest financial priority is just trying to pay the bills. 19% of Americans say it's dealing with credit card debt. So now you have basically 40 and 20%, almost 60% of Americans aren't basically doing anything for retirement. That's what I'm trying to say is that they're saying that the numbers, the way they are now, that this is the best it's been in a long time. In more than a decade, this is the best it's been.
Wait, what's the best it's been?
The economy. There was a time in World War II when they sold war bonds. Remember the thing to do that was, patriotic?
Just to buy war bonds.
You want to beat the Hun? You want to, put Kojo back in his hole? Buy war bonds. All right. Fast forward about 60 years, George Bush, at a press conference, when asked by reporters, what can we do to support this Iraq war? Remember when everybody was, we're going to get those terrorists by going in and getting Saddam, right? I don't know how that didn't work out particularly well, but nonetheless, when asked, he said, well, go shopping.
Mm-hmm.
The advice changed. How can we support war in 1940? Buy war bonds. How can we support it in 2002 or 2003? Go shopping. That's a big difference. Mm-hmm. And that's because the economy is designed differently now. You are supposed to be a consumer. Things were going real well in 2005 before the boom, when Americans Americans, consumer debt was higher than consumer earning. It was higher than GDP. And that, it's not doing that right now. Americans seem to have learned that lesson, mm-hmm. and our debt to income ratios going, getting better. I would say, in fact, it's not what you make, it's what you spend.
Well, right. That's how you would get out of debt in the first place. So,
no,
I mean, if you
not
can
just
get...
getting out of debt, though. I mean going beyond that.
I understand that. But
the savings,
too. If you can pay off your debt, that suggests that you can then save. You just keep doing the same thing you were doing to pay off the debt, and then you just put that money into savings. That's all you'd have to do there.
Agreed.
Right.
It's just that, your lifestyle isn't going to be fantastic, but you know, it's okay.
That's what you're used to.
I lived in an 800 square foot house until very recently, and mm-hmm. you know, life was pretty good. I was happy. I had all the room I needed.
You keep your costs down.
You're wealthy in the love that you get from your family and your friends.
You're also wealthy in that you're not, you know, eking out an existence on some African desert somewhere, right? Like, there's a lot of very unpleasant places that you could be instead of in a nice, warm, or air conditioned home.
I'd rather have an 800 square foot cabin paid off mm-hmm. than to have some 3,000 square foot house that I'm making a $2,500 a month mortgage payment on.
Absolutely.
And you know, I'd rather have what's mine and, you know, not have to be worried about what's coming next. It's difficult when you deal with the permabears out there. And I don't know whether Ron Paul's a permabear, but it seems like he's always looking for
somebody who's negative about the right. economy.
A
or
permabear
future.
Is a person who believes that the next economic crisis is always a month away.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's not. Right? The people, the liars and thieves, the financial jugglers and the circus that we call global finance, they're good at juggling.
They are.
Juggled for a long time. They can keep those balls in the air when you would think they can't. But how many financial crises have you lived through in your life? You know, there's Black Tuesday, and maybe it was Black Monday. I don't know. There was the one in the, you know, the SNL debacle. There's the dot-com boom and bust. Mm-hmm. There's the Great Recession. There's quite a few of them just since I've become an adult. And that's something. I mean, they just keep happening. Every few years, it seems like, and I don't know, 7, 8, 10 years. Well, it's been the recession that precipitated the housing bust that went on was, I believe, in the end of 2005. No, the recession.
I did go through the housing thing.
Recession was 2007. The housing bust was 2005.
I lost money selling a house in Florida during that.
Sure. It's not like they didn't warn us. I mean, poly meaning many, ticks meaning bloodsuckers, right?
They're not going to be pretty. Have you ever looked at a tick under a microscope? My God, it's a horrifying monstrosity.
Well, yeah, they're little monsters. I don't see any particular value with calling politicians ugly.
How about scum of the earth?
Okay, I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Generally, they're very successful liars. And thieves.
They are. Well, I mean, not as well. They're successful, but they could have been more successful if they'd like had some business sense or
and
something.
And it's, you know, people like to refer back to the Constitution, and I think that if the government abided by the Constitution, we'd be in significantly better stead than we currently are. But besides that, the Constitution sets up a system where the most successful person at campaigning is the one who gets the job. And doesn't seem like a particularly good way to choose a person to do that job. Mm. I think we'd be better off at this point if we randomly picked a new president every year.
Off with no Washington, D.C. and no president.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with that necessarily either, but, you know,
deserves that kind of power.
The move.
And I'm including nobody, who is our co-host during the week. Mark, you mentioned this repo rate. This is not doesn't have to do with taking back cars that right. have not had payments made.
No, the repo rate is basically this. It hasn't had to be, you know, they haven't had to do this since like 2008. But very recently, some banks have needed some to borrow overnight mm-hmm. to cover their legal requirements. So there's what they call fractional reserve banking. Is what we do in the United States. So a bank needs to have a certain percentage in deposits for the amount that it has in loans.
Right. It's like 9-to-1 or something right. like that.
And it really can't do anything about its loans very well, but it can go and borrow from the Federal Reserve overnight at a low rate. But when lots of banks are doing this, the Federal Reserve needs to make lots of funds available, mm-hmm. and the rate tends to go up, and, you know, just a whole variety of things. So it's not good. It's showing instability in the marketplace. Plus,
what is showing instability? The repo. More banks are doing more of these loans.
Banks have to legally borrow, mm-hmm. and haven't had to for years.
I see. So if they're in a pinch, they don't have enough money in the vault. Right. They need to make more loans. They then have to borrow more money to make the more loans. Is that the
idea? They just need the money. People have taken their deposits out.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners. This is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy. So I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
Dollars aren't just used inside the United States and Panama and a few other countries. They're used globally for global markets. When and if they stop using them globally and start using anything else, Bitcoin, a basket of currencies created by the World Bank, the euro, the ruble, whatever it is, if they switch for whatever reason, then your dollar, it just crashes the market. And I don't know, I'm not claiming that's what's going to happen, but it could.
Well, the dollar is kind of funny because I follow cryptocurrency related news in a lot of cases. It's one of the things I'm interested in. And so I get that, how Google has their little news feed. They know what you search for, so they know what you want to see in news feed, right? Well, one of the sort of related stories to cryptocurrencies is obviously stuff regarding fiat, like the dollar. And I've been seeing a lot of dollar propaganda pieces out there. And I wish I had one of the headlines in front of me right now, but they've basically been like, looks like the dollar is the world's refuge, and for people that care about value or whatever. And here's a headline. I just typed in dollar into Google News search from CNBC, published 2 days ago. Dollar hits highest level in 2 years.
We talked about the repo rate, but I would also point out that the short-term lending rates have recently gone higher than long-term lending rates, and a few times we've crossed that line. That line being crossed often indicates what we used to call a recession. I don't know if we're going to still have recessions in the future. There's been several, and the longest running bull run in the stock market in history is, I guess, still going on or something. We can't. I mean, at some point or another, no one's fool enough to say that there isn't going to be another economic downturn. When is it going to happen? Well, I'd say we're due. Are there any indications that it's going to happen in the near future? Yes, there are a few. Is that good? Well, no. It's not good for any of us. I don't know how to make money in that particular market. There are financial whizzes that'll claim that they can do that, and good luck to them.
Well, it's hard to, let's say, you do sales for Free Talk Live. It's harder to sell things with people that want to spend, right?
The functional difference between serfdom and what we have today with property taxes isn't much, right? So, slaves had their whole volition taken away. Serfs, they were bound to the land. They couldn't move, but they had to, work a certain amount for the Lord on his property, and then they could have their own. Us today, well, in order to live on your property, all you have to do is pay the government to live there. Now, right. That sounds like rent, doesn't it?
Sure does.
Well, so the government's the big landlord out there. Whether it's the, whatever municipal government, it's all tied to the state government. The state government's tied to the federal government. It's all one big thing. So what I hear this person who's arguing in this situation is all they're doing is arguing for the status quo, which is you've got to continue paying your taxes to the Lord. The Lord, they're the best, and they're not, right? The government is obviously the worst service organization, because we know business will do this. Business will provide the least amount of service at the highest price that it can in the marketplace. When you have a monopoly, then you have somebody providing the least amount of service and the highest price that will prevent basically a revolt.
You have to look at property absolutism and say, okay, what in a free society, in a free world, just snap, the government disappears. What is legitimate property? Because you could have two guys divide the whole world into parcels and split it between them. Now, that wouldn't be legitimate property, but neither would it be to say that, you know, people have no right to possess, the things that they use where they live, the home they live in, the tools they use to do their jobs, the things that they sink their, you know, invest their time and money in. Mm-hmm. Clearly, they have a right to have, you know, very real possession of that thing and the products of their labor. So, all property isn't equal. So we live in a rigged system, and it was very much rigged by people who largely, and we have a very, you know, diffuse system of property. We all have the ability to, you know, invest in property, own homes in many cases, maybe some investment properties, who knows, but we have a rigged system of large land ownership that originally is recognized by many classical liberal and libertarian thinkers as being most great land holdings of the past have been won in wars, won in conflict, not really ever acquired in history through voluntary means. So, okay.
Yeah, that's true of a lot of land, I guess. You know, that is one of the things that local governments tend to do is divvy up the land, and they have on file who owns what. That's not to say that couldn't be done in the marketplace without the government.
It could be done on the blockchain right now.
Yeah, I mean, it could be done much more efficiently, certainly without government. But, you know, is that their primary function? No, it seems like their primary function is to reward their friends and punish their enemies.
Yeah, and their friends tend to have a lot of private property in the most illibertarian sense, and have ever since the the state was invented, the modern state came about, and I think that's completely intentional as the function of the state. Murray Rothbard mentioned briefly mentioned the essay I pulled up, Confiscation and the Homestead Principle. And this was in the radical 60s when Murray Rothbard was very, very much part of the radical 60s. Hear about homesteading, the illegitimate property of the state and the corporations. And he mentioned some of the very largest corporations, I think like Dow Chemical, General Dynamics and stuff. Corporations that
So you're
were
calling
at
to promote
the
idea of homesteading, which I think is a fine idea. I think homesteading is a good idea, and I think that all of the government land out there should be open to homesteading. I mean, people should be able to go out there and set up shop or set up a tent or build a house and claim some of that government land. I mean, right now they own or they claim at least 2/3 of the land west of the Mississippi.
80% of presidents in my lifetime have gone to Ivy League schools or military universities or military colleges, and that is kind of this system for picking who gets to be in charge and who doesn't. If you walk into a room and you say, I went to Harvard, then suddenly you have a control and a power and a gravitas in that room.
Not in my room.
Maybe,
I don't care.
Maybe that's true for you, but maybe...
Sound like a prick to me. Get out of here.
There's a lot of people that feel differently.
Uh-huh.
Like the vast majority of people are going to defer to somebody who went to Harvard. Yeah, absolutely.
People are that sad and pathetic? Like they're going to care where somebody went to school? What have you really done? That's what
badge.
I want to know.
Well, I mean, it's a place to start. What have they really done?
You got a piece of paper from some fancy-ass school? I don't care.
Well, they managed to make it to president. I'd say that
not these, impressed with that either. That just means you're a thug.
That there's probably 5,000 jobs in the world that you can't – that are going to be very difficult, much more difficult mm-hmm. to get if you don't have one of these important university degrees.
Sounds boring to me.
Well, you don't want to live that life,
yeah.
And that's fine.
Right.
I'm just saying that that's another way that
let them have their caviar or whatever it is they're into.
Well, they
fancy
get,
stuff.
Those 5,000 jobs largely are jobs that control people.
Now, when you say the government's been hijacked, by whom and when?
Well, by the powers that be, the eternal they, the money people. The
well,
people
haven't
that,
they always
know, that,
been in charge of the government?
Well, I guess, but the people that wrote the initial paperwork, the Bill of Rights, and the Constitution and whatnot, they were a lot smarter than they're given credit for, but their meanings have been distorted over the years, and there's, you know, like I said, things have been hijacked.
Mm. Okay, and so it, I mean, they were not, like landowners, though, back then.
It's not simple to determine or ascertain, but it is what it is.
There's no doubt those men, by comparison, weren't as powerful as the ones that are in those positions today. So I guess I can see what you're saying. Go ahead.
All right, but what, and anyway, the inadequacy of the educational system is passed on to the university system, and it's also brainwashing. I mean, it doesn't teach them the original founding, you know, and if you don't know the foundation, you can't rebuild the structure. But I guess what, and the other thing I'm pointing at here is like all these Ivy League universities, they were probably founded by people that came over here and were apprentices. They didn't go to college.
I saw an interesting stat that if you compare two people, one for 45 years, one of them buys a new car every 15 years and pays off that car in 5 years, like, you know, a normal car loan, and then doesn't pay anything for 10 years and then gets another new car and then pays it off in 5 years and right, keeps going. And another person who has a car payment every year, every you know, every month for 15 years, right? They just keep on getting a new car after the old one's paid off, more or less. So the new car every 5 years. That the difference is if you took that money that you saved and you put it into something bearing 8% interest, and you know they can show the S&P 500 stock thing, whatever, you put it in this S&P matching fund thing, that you would have $750,000.
And hold on, this is just comparing people who buy new cars. So you're saying you were comparing somebody who buys a new car, pays it off in five, keeps it for 10, versus somebody who just keeps getting them every 5 years?
Right.
So we're not even comparing somebody who's like, I don't know, not buying new cars and instead just buys a used car and then runs that for, you know,
yeah,
half a
used
decade
car, you're going to have, I mean, everything has a payment, right? You know, there's a cost.
Upkeep. There's repair.
Right. There's repairs. And but this is just sort of looking at these two scenarios together. You know, I had used cars for a long time. I've got a new car now. Pretty happy with
it. I've never had a new car in my life. I can't ever see doing something like that. Speaking of crazy, Miley Cyrus apparently is backing a cannabis cafe. Now, I don't know if it's crazy to back a cannabis cafe, but you know, she's had her share of incidents. America's First Lounge, this according to Bloomberg. Apparently Bloomberg Canada? BNN Bloomberg, whatever that is. Their first lounge to allow consuming cannabis in the United States, and I would say since Prohibition started, opens on Monday in West Hollywood. It's called Lowell Cafe and brings a bit of Amsterdam to the U.S. with a fancy name. For the first time in the country, customers will legally be able to order pot as if it were a bottle of wine. And that, in fact, is the upscale analog its owners are aiming for. The cannabis can be smoked in pre-rolled joints or vaped, even as the industry is grappling with a spike in lung damage and deaths linked to vaping. Now, let's clarify here. The industry isn't grappling with this because it's not their problem. The industry has certain, you know, manufacturing standards that they adhere to, and the industry of THC-related vape products is fine. Their products are not the ones that are being accused of killing people. The ones that are accused of killing people are the black market THC vape products.
For me personally, college didn't exactly pan out, and so I'm about to start a website where I consult people and offer different services and things like that. And y'all grew a business from the ground up. I mean, libertarianism 20 years ago, hardly anybody was really into it. So how did y'all do that? How did you find people?
I'm pretty sure hardly anybody is still into libertarianism today. I don't know if that much has changed with this.
Ron Paul certainly made a big change, though.
He had an impact on some people. I don't know if libertarianism is bigger now because of Ron Paul. It doesn't feel much bigger to me. You know,
well,
I don't know what the numbers of the Libertarian Party are showing. Go ahead.
Is one person bigger because of me.
Okay, fair enough.
Y'all got me into it.
But there's also people who get fed up and quit, too. So, I don't know. There's a bit of a churn, I think, involved in political movements because people burn out. They get frustrated with the lack of success. They were just talking on the radio this morning here in Keene, New Hampshire, where we live. There's like a local kind of Politico show on Saturday mornings. They were talking about ballot access requirements here in New Hampshire, and the Republicans and Democrats raised the number from 3% to 4%. that they have to get in like a statewide race, so like the gubernatorial race, if the Libertarians get 4%, they get ballot access at the same level as the Democrats and Republicans. We don't pay rent because we're in my living room. You know, we're in a nice studio in my living room. And so there's never been like a studio rent payment in downtown Sarasota, Florida, or something right. that we had to pay for.
Take, that's great advice. Mm-hmm. Take on debt as slowly as you can in your business. Mm. The reason that our business worked is because Ian had a skill set of understanding programming on the radio and making the little blinking boxes work. I had the skill set of selling radio ads, and we decided to put something together where we could use our two skill sets. And basically, we chose to create content for free in the hopes that we could, in the future, grow this into something that we could sell. We certainly can, to the point that Ian was just complaining during the breaks that I'm selling too much and he doesn't want to do the work. So yeah. I have to bring on somebody to do some extra stuff. But I mean, you know, those are successes. And I think that, it's fair to mention that. Ian's correct. We are the street preachers of the ideas of liberty. We're going out and trying to find people who don't know these ideas and bring them into the fold. And I think that anybody who understands what the ideas of liberty are, what a libertarian is, that's a success for us. Because usually once they understand it, then they say, oh, well, yeah, that makes perfectly good sense. And, you know, they may not dedicate their life to it. They go off and do whatever they do, but at least they understand.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.